Welcome to episode 33 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
We'll start with our usual news roundup, and we've got quite a lot of different topics to talk about. First up, we've noticed some new spy photos related to Andor, which is still filming on location in the UK. Without giving too much away, it's interesting just to see that this is still being produced out in the wild, and people are able to capture spy photos. The most recent ones show filming taking place at a reservoir, a dam type arrangement in Scotland for an Imperial base scene, and I think we can safely say that that's expected and not a spoiler. I think it's interesting that filming is still going on for this, because we've talked about it a little bit over a number of different podcasts. And part of the reason for that is because we're expecting a full 12 episodes, just to remind you if that had slipped your attention. 12 episodes coming out next year. We don't have a firm date for that, but that is longer than the run we've seen for The Mandalorian and such like. I'm looking forward to a decent stretch of content like that.
I'm really keen to see if this will be a slightly episodic storyline, or whether the 12 episodes means that they've got a really in-depth story, quite a complicated story to really sort of stretch out through 12 episodes, because that ends up being like multiple movies in length.
Oh yeah, and lots of different locations. So I think if it is a singular story, the arc it's going to have a little bit of an episodic tone to it. I feel that's just what's going to happen based on what we've seen in terms of the number of different locations. But yeah, it'll be really interesting if it feels like one big giant movie when it's all done. Something a little bit more immediate to talk about. There's a couple of really interesting bits of content coming up on Disney Plus over the next month or so. Next month, August the 25th, which is a Wednesday, a special episode of Disney Gallery The Mandalorian will be coming out. This is the behind the scenes of The Mandalorian. We've seen an entire series of these for season one, a singular episode for season two. This is another behind the scenes look at season two. It's focusing on the season two finale, which was Chapter 16, The Rescue, directed by Jon Favreau. So that's coming out on August the 25th, Wednesday, on Disney Plus. Looking forward to that.
Obviously, with the big reveals and big sort of dramatic moments in that episode specifically, it'll be really fun to see some on-set and behind-the-scenes footage. So I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of information other than a teaser image that came out from the official Star Wars social media channels. But just looking back, that first season of the Disney Gallery behind the scenes, they were about between 20 and 40 minutes in duration. The special that related to season two of The Mandalorian was 70 minutes in duration. So I'm expecting somewhere between 30 and maybe 60, or if we're really, really lucky, longer than 60 minutes of behind the scenes content for that. Also coming out on Disney Plus a little bit closer, next Wednesday, July the 21st, is a documentary series called Behind the Attraction. Now, this focuses on the rides at the Disney parks. And, of course, we know that there's a number of Star Wars rides at Disney parks. There will be an entire episode dedicated to all of the Star Wars rides and the history of the Star Wars rides at the Disney parks, starting with Star Tours and moving through to Galaxy's Edge with the Smuggler's Run and Rise of the Resistance rides. We've been teased that we'll be getting a lot of new information, material that hasn't been seen before in terms of photos and behind-the-scenes access to these rides.
These rides launched in 2019, so unless you managed to go at the very end of 2019, many of us here in New Zealand would not have been able to visit Galaxy's Edge at the Disney parks in the US before international travel became unavailable to us. And for most of us, we still can't get to the US parks to experience these amazing attractions. I see that the parks are predominantly mainly fully open for American guests that have been fully vaccinated. So it's fun to see Disney giving us a little bit of a sort of a tease of this amazing Star Wars rides and experiences for those of us who are just waiting for the day that we can finally experience them for ourselves.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a tease, because I mean, we really want to go to Galaxy's Edge and do the Smuggler's Run and Rise of the Resistance Run, but at this rate it's going to be a little bit of a time before it's appropriate to do that. So just to reiterate, the documentary series is called Behind the Attraction. There's going to be 10 episodes in total. The first 5 episodes come out next week, I think. We don't know for certain. I think I've seen some information that suggests that the Star Wars episode will be in that first batch, but the second batch of 5 episodes will come out down the line. So if we don't see the Star Wars Star Tours Galaxy's Edge episode in the first batch. We will see it later in the year. We'll follow up on that probably in the next podcast. Speaking of Disney parks, coming to the East Coast in 2022 will be the Galactic Star Cruiser Hotel. And the reason I just throw this into our news roundup is that there are a few more really good photographs of the development of that Star Cruiser Hotel. And at this point, it's looking like the exterior and the grounds, the entranceway, are fully complete. So things, although they have been delayed by the COVID-19 pandemic, are on track for a 2022 opening. We don't have a solid date for that, but sometime in 2022. If you're not familiar with the Galactic Star Cruiser Hotel, it is a two-night immersive holiday that you have to book, and your entire experience there is a simulation of being on a spaceship. And you get taken from the hotel, which is the hotel itself is part of the immersive experience. You get taken from the hotel to the Galaxy's Edge in the parks by way of a shuttle. You don't see the outside world. You're taken from a docking bay at the hotel to a docking bay at the park. And the whole intention of the process is for it to feel like you are in Star Wars. So that's a crazy thought, really.
All the windows aren't windows. They're like digital screens that will make it appear as if you're looking out to space and seeing things outside.
That applies to the hotel and the transport between the two points, yeah.
And that'll be pretty cool that you'll be able to have your own sort of entrance into Galaxy's Edge. So it's like, they almost said it's almost like a cruise rather than a hotel, because it's for a set period of time and it has quite sort of the immersive travel experience, although obviously it's kind of a short cruise. But I kind of like the fact that it's like a two-night that's kept. So they can sort of, they'll figure out how to fit all the experiences, because if you've watched any of the other little teasers online, you would have seen Disney Parks sort of teasing a very realistic looking lightsaber, which has an extending blade that fully illuminates, and they've filed patents and stuff like that. So people kind of investigating the inner workings of this, but they have specifically built this lightsaber for a lightsaber training experience within the hotel. So
the hotels are really going to be part of the experience, as well as just going to Galaxy's Edge. They'll be entertaining you from the minute you walk in. We're going to see characters, aliens, droids, and actual things, interactive things for you to do.
It's going to be like the most immersive experience one can imagine, and it's going to be so popular. It's going to be pricey probably because of the sort of the deluxe theming on this. It's probably going to be on par with Disney's deluxe hotel price points,
which can be as much as $1,000 per night.
Yes, so it'll definitely be a little bit of an investment, but sort of like
probably per family though,
per room.
Yeah.
So it'll be one of those sort of once in a lifetime experiences. You don't need to do it every time you go to Disney, but doing it once is going to be certainly on a lot of Star Wars fans' bucket lists.
Now, you might know better than me. What part of Walt Disney World is this located in?
This will be just beside Hollywood Studios, because it connects to Galaxy's Edge, which is located in Hollywood Studios. Because the four parks that make up Walt Disney World are actually quite spread apart. You have to drive between them because they're actually further apart than you might think looking at a map. So having your own transport straight from the hotel to the parks is going to be a bonus. And also, you generally have to pay a lot to have a hotel that's very close to the parks. There's a premium for staying quite close, like the Grand Floridian and the Polynesian resorts are across the water from Magic Kingdom. So those are expensive resorts if you want to stay at Walt Disney. But I from everything I've seen about the Star Wars Hotel, it's going to be worth it.
And just rounding out our news roundup, The Mandalorian has scored a total of 24 Emmy nominations this year. The list of Emmy nominations has come out in the last day or two. Really interesting to see this list, particularly interesting to see that Kiwi cinematographer Baz Idoine, who we've talked about before in the podcast and we've written about on the SWNZ website, has been nominated again for his cinematography. He's specifically nominated for Chapter 13, The Jedi, which was Ahsoka's first appearance. Last year, he actually won in that same category. Last year, The Mandalorian was nominated for a total of 15 awards, I believe, and they won 7. So they've upped the game this year with 24 nominations. It'll be interesting to see how many they actually take home. The nominations are spread across a lot of different categories, including drama series, sound editing, visual effects, casting, sound mixing, cinematography, as I mentioned. Interestingly, there's 2 nominations for cinematography because of the varying length in episodes. It's nominated in the 1-hour cinematography classification, but also in the half-hour cinematography classification. So 2 different cinematographers are nominated for The Mandalorian, but they're not actually going head-to-head. We've got nominations for stunt performance, writing, Dave Filoni for writing, Jon Favreau also for writing the final episode, The Rescue, and costuming, hairstyling, prosthetic makeup all get nominations, which is really cool to see. And finally, in the categories of supporting actor and guest actors, Giancarlo Esposito, Timothy Olyphant, and Carl Weathers all get nominations. So it'll be interesting to see how well it does in terms of wins very shortly.
It's really interesting to me because often when it comes to award shows, particularly with the Oscars, but it tends to have a flow-on effect to other award shows, that sci-fi doesn't nearly get the respect and the awards that other classical drama shows do. And it's interesting that The Mandalorian was nominated for 24 Emmys, which is the highest number of The Crown. And The Crown obviously has a lot of reputation for being a drama piece and things like that. It always gets a lot of nods for acting.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. Obviously, The Mandalorian's leaning a little more heavily towards some of the technical ones, but it's neat to see it actually being recognized for the cultural phenomenon. You know, like you can't just go, oh, this is a little sci-fi show on a lower network.
Well, it's nominated for drama series, which I mentioned is up directly against The Crown in that category. So as well as winning the same amount as The Crown, it's going head to head in that top category.
Yeah, but it just goes to show just how beloved this series is. My one thing is I do wish Pedro Pascal had been nominated. I know that he wears a helmet for a lot of it, but his performance is so nuanced. His line deliveries, it's almost like a highly skilled form of sort of mime. And I guess any actor that has ever worn a mask or a helmet in a Star Wars film will can tell you just how complicated that is when you don't have your expressions to rely on. And honestly, his acting in that final episode with Grogu is just, I know a lot of us would have shed a tear at that scene that was just so emotional, and he pulled that off really well. And I think that scene alone deserved a nomination. So fingers crossed next time, especially since now that The Mandalorian seems a little more comfortable taking his helmet off, we might get to see his face a little bit more, and the award nominees might finally give him the nomination that I think he deserves.
Yeah, the other point that's just worth discussing a little bit is this is the first big Star Wars live action out of Disney Plus. I hope, and it'll be interesting to see if the other titles get a similar reception. Imagine if the Book of Boba Fett got a similar reception and we see Tim Morrison's name in there for as an Emmy Award nominee.
We also saw, speaking of Disney Plus series, WandaVision, the first sort of main Marvel entry into the streaming space, also picked up a lot of nominations, including 3 acting nominations for the lead actors. So yeah, I'm optimistic that it looks like the Star Wars content from Disney Plus is finally getting sort of respected in the award space. We love it. We know that it's good. So it's just neat to see the people that help create our favorite Star Wars content are getting the accolades from their peers.
Yeah, so I mean, the people on the ground are doing the hard work. Disney Plus is investing heavily in the live action streaming series that correspond to their movie franchises, and it's paying off. Okay, moving from news roundup to our product announcements and store reports. Hasbro Pulse revealed a number of exclusive, I believe, action figures that will be coming, and hopefully we'll be able to track these down from New Zealand one way or another, although the exclusive and Hasbro Pulse reveals are sometimes a little more challenging. You can buy direct from Hasbro Pulse, and we have done that in the past using a freight forwarding service in the US. Coming out from these Hasbro Pulse reveals, there is a Black Series 6-inch Trapper Wolf figure that's Dave Filoni's character in his X-Wing pilot costume from his appearances in The Mandalorian, his cameo appearances. That comes in a special particular display box, I believe. I'm quite interested to see the Power of the Force 2 Cantina Showdown playset. This is a 6-inch Black Series version of the early cinema scenes. It was the first 4-inch action figure cinema scene that we saw way back in the 90s now, but rendered in 6-inch scale. So it comes with a Cantina bar playset as seen on Tatooine and Star Wars A New Hope, of course. And finally, there's also a vintage collection in the 3.75-inch scale Emperor's Throne Room Diorama. They're calling it a diorama, but it's really just a backdrop. So this is the Emperor sitting on his throne with a very large Death Star window behind him from the Return of the Jedi space battle scenes.
There are some figures that just need that little bit of extra sort of scenery to go with them. And I think you can't really, like, you need the Emperor on his throne. Like, I'm excited that that's coming out. I'm curious to see how, whether this is like the start of the sort of more expanded figures with extra sort of bits and pieces. I'm always a fan of playsets and things like that done in plastic, not cardboard. And I am digging this continual nostalgia trip of the Power of the Force 2 Cantina Showdown playset. Those were early days in my collecting journey. And I'm just loving the fact that they're running with this sort of nostalgia. They've tapped vintage collectors for about as much as they can with the vintage collection. And I think they're seeing how well that's going down. So they're going, okay, what other runs can we just repackage and do in the Black Series line? And oh my gosh, we tried to resist Black Series for so long, but Hasbro has really found where it fits for collectors. And I think we're well and truly Black Series collectors now.
We've seen a number of different product releases that feature this nostalgic packaging. The Power of the Force 2 one is really interesting, and I think because it was so early in the game. I saw a bit of an online conversation on this topic, and oddly, the opening post was actually not in favor of them, but every single post beyond that was countering that point. Everyone really does seem to like the Power of the Force nostalgia, and seeing this cinema scene, that's an interesting product. Also, in store reports locally now, Mighty Ape has a total of 10 different Star Wars calendars that will be coming out from next month. They're all up for pre-order at this point. A number of different sizes. They come in standard wall size, that's about the 12-inch by 12-inch, mini size, and day-at-a-time desktop pads, ranging in price from $20 to $40. There's also a $52 advent calendar. Some very cool graphics in there. There's a very cool vintage inspired one, but we've got those all listed with pictures on the SWNZ website. Check those out. A podcast or two back, we talked about the animated style Battle of Endor AT-ST statue from Kotobukiya/ArtFX that was announced to be available at the official Sideshow website. It's now available locally from Mighty Ape. We did a quick price check. Locally, it's $384 if you were to buy direct from Sideshow, with currency conversion and shipping taken into account, will cost you over $400. So the local pricing is pretty good. So just to remind everyone, when we talked about this last time, this is the 20 centimeter tall animated style statue of 10 different Ewoks attacking a AT-ST scout walker on Endor. It's very fun, and we both like it a lot. Also, I guess on the topic of store reports, a negative store report, basically. We've seen a lot of dismay because EB Games in the past week have cancelled everybody's pre-order for the 6-inch Black Series Jedi Knight Revan action figure. I saw a lot of disappointed conversation about this, and unfortunately it's become a bit of a pattern for EB Games. We talk about EB Games in the podcast and on the website when they have unique or exclusive product, because if you go into the stores, they are worth checking out. But frustratingly, when it comes to pre-orders, they just have a distinct pattern of messing collectors around. Cancelling pre-orders, this is not the first time they've cancelled pre-orders. We saw a number of the Retro Collection 4-inch scale, 3.75-inch scale action figures cancelled a few months back. And there's been some real challenges when it comes to pre-ordering exclusive figures or even non-exclusive figures from EB Games. So, yeah, a bit of a sad report in that regard.
It is such a weird way to run a business. Obviously, they have a lot of licenses that they import, you know, Hasbro, Sideshow, even some Gentle Giant stuff. And when they do pre-orders, the items in question are not available yet. You know, so when they posted up the Jedi Knight Revan figure, it wasn't available on, you know, like it was, you know, Hasbro had announced it and it was available for pre-order. And EB Games was the only place in New Zealand you could get it from because they had it as an exclusive. So when they wait a year and a half, well,
that's the other thing I didn't actually mention.
Finally cancel
people
it.
People placed this in, what are we in now? We're in late 2019, early 2020.
And you know that once it started hitting shelves internationally, there's like maybe a month or so that you can kind of forgive as a delay getting stock in. But once it's past the year mark, you know Hasbro's not going to fulfill that long standing out order if EB Games hasn't done anything by now. So it seems really weird that they take everybody's pre-order money and sit on it for a year and a half and finally email out people. It's like they understand that collectors will pay more for figures because they amp up the price on their Black Series exclusive figures beyond a standard figure, but then they don't really appreciate the negative blowback that's going to happen when collectors are now forced to, well after Revan sold out internationally, to have to go and pay eBay scalper prices, inflated prices, because once a collectible sells out from stockists, if it's a popular character like Revan, it's going to increase in price. So what happened for us, I'm a big Revan fan. We had personally pre-ordered this figure, but some time ago, a couple of our pre-orders for the retro figures got cancelled, and we started thinking, okay, this is making us lose our faith in EB Games being able to deliver. And Jedi Revan had been on our pre-order books for quite some time, so we thought that we would cover ourselves, and we bought one from overseas a while ago. And we thought, well, if EB Games actually pulls our pre-order in, then we can sell it at cost to a local fan that needs it, that might have missed out on the pre-order. And lo and behold,
our gamble fell on the right side for us, but unfortunately not for others.
Yeah, so everyone else that really wants that figure is now going to have to hunt for that one internationally from resellers that are going to pay more than if they'd gotten it. Even at EB Games slightly inflated prices, it's still going to cost them a lot more to import that from overseas. So we're really feeling for the local collectors. It's not fun to see Star Wars collectors get screwed over by sort of the monopoly of a few stores that we have in New Zealand. EB Games gets a lot of exclusives and then we're completely at their mercy. You don't want to always have to order overseas just because you don't want to miss out because your local store may or may not give you the thing that you paid for.
It's just a shame. I mean, it's a shame on a number of different levels. This is not the first time we've seen this happen. We've seen other types of problems with pre-orders as well. People placing pre-orders then finding out that they're on the shelves, or in one weird scenario, they're being sold at a discounted price at Armageddon Expo when people hadn't actually even got their pre-orders shipped out to them. So there's been other oddities, other negative processes taking place in terms of pre-orders. And it is a shame because I like EB Games. And I like the stores have now, these days, more so than in the distant past, you know, some good stuff in there, some good apparel, some good statues. They do have some interesting figures. And the store people on the ground are good people. They're knowledgeable and generally helpful. But it's the company's process, the company's systems are broken in this regard.
Yes, particularly since they have, their stores are much more half and half between games and sort of pop culture merch. They know that people buying physical discs for games is pretty much a thing of the past now. Everyone wants to download it day of release. You don't get scratch discs if you've got a digital download. It runs fine. And it's just a lot less hassle. So they're obviously leaning hard on the merchandise side. You know, they're a big stockist for Funkos and they do a lot of exclusive products. So it's just really weird that they would almost deliberately tarnish their reputation among their customer base by doing something like this. I mean, when they take people's money for a pre-order and then they're just like not pre-ordering the item in question from the stockist, it's just like, I don't understand how that's a business model in this day and age.
So it's not fun. We don't choose to come down hard on local retailers because it's odd. It's rare in New Zealand. But this is an example where I think it's fair to give collectors a valid warning that if you place a pre-order with EB Games, it's not 100% guaranteed that it's actually going to follow through. There's a number of other retailers around the country where, you know, cancellations do happen, but the way they are managed, you know, can be done in a better way, and holding onto people's deposits for a very, very long time is not the way to do it. We haven't had similar problems from Mighty Ape. We haven't had similar problems from the newer retailers like Pop Guardian or Pop Stop. So, you know, shop around and, you know, take that warning as you will.
Thank you. With the explosion of other stores, like you say, Pop Stop, Pop Guardian, Toy Co. I mean, EB Games is the New Zealand branch of GameStop in the US, but at some point, they're going to lose traction with the local market. They'll always get, like, just the mall browsing fans that want a Funko or a t-shirt, but they stock some very expensive statues, and people are just not going to want to give them their money. You know, if you want to sort of support the local businesses that are actually supporting fans. So, yeah, it's a disappointing story, but I hope those of you that really wanted Revan and had your pre-order cancelled, that you have good luck on eBay or Amazon and are able to track down Jedi Revan for your collection.
Okay, moving on to something a bit more positive, the latest episode of Bad Batch from last week, episode 11, entitled Devil's Deal. Super exciting episode, I think it's fair to say. Great to see the return of the Blurgs and those other characters. So this episode opens on Ryloth when Senator Ornfree Tarr announces that a new Imperial refinery is going to open, and he encourages the Twi'lek, depending on how you want to say it, freedom fighters to lay down their arms. Interestingly, we see in the opening scenes, Resistance leader Cham Syndulla publicly at that point supporting the Empire. Now, we're going to talk a lot about Cham Syndulla because we went back and watched his origin episodes from the Clone Wars, and there's a really interesting story there to be told. We did this when Cad Bane showed up in The Bad Batch, and it's a really fun way, as we said at that time, to go back and look at distinct stories from the Clone Wars that relate to The Bad Batch and just get that history in place. Just carry on the summary of episode 11 though. Cham Syndulla's Lieutenant Gobi Glee takes Cham's daughter, Hera, on a secret mission to retrieve new weapons that happened to be delivered by the Bad Batch. Crosshair's tracking them and the Empire arrests Glee and Hera for treason. But Rampart is in a particularly devious mood, sets the Freedom Fighters up as the assassins of Senator Ornfree Tarr. And the episode closes with Chopper taking Hera in a speeder and escaping, basically, while the others are taken into custody. So just talking about Cham Syndulla briefly first, he's been a political revolutionary on Ryloth, particularly as a consequence of Ornfree Tarr's corruption. And at the time of the Clone Wars, Ryloth was being invaded by the Confederacy of Independent Systems. And we saw a number of episodes focusing on the Ryloth resistance led by Cham Syndulla, spanning over about a 3-story arc, starting in Season 1, Episode 19, Storm Over Ryloth, through Episode 20, Innocence of Ryloth, and then in Episode 21, Liberty on Ryloth, we actually see the first appearance of Cham Syndulla. That was back in 2009. Now, the interesting thing here is everyone's going to be getting quite excited about the appearance of Hera in this episode of The Bad Batch. But it is, in fact, Cham Syndulla that has been around the longest. He first appeared in 2009. It wasn't until 2015 that it was revealed, confirmed, that he was Hera's father prior to Hera's appearance in Rebels. That first episode where Cham Syndulla appeared in Season 1 was, in fact, also the first appearance of Blurgs since the Ewoks, the Battle for Endor movie came out back in the mid-80s. So I wasn't kidding when I said it should have been called The Return of the Blurgs. I am a fan of those two-legged critters and their appearance in The Mandalorian as well. And it was cool to see them in this most recent episode of The Bad Batch. A little bit of other trivia that's kind of worth noting. Robin Atkin-Downs, who voiced Cham Syndulla, did so in those very early episodes with a French accent. And that kind of related to the sort of French resistance role that he played and the other Ryloth freedom fighters played in the opposition against the separatists. And that's obviously been carried over with Hera Syndulla having an accent when she's at this younger age on Ryloth. And it worked out well for Vanessa Marshall, who has returned to voice Hera in this younger version, because she's actually fluent in French, so it wasn't a challenge for her to put on that French accent.
The voice of Hera in this is obviously a younger sounding voice than Hera in Rebels, so I was not sure initially, because of the accent and the sort of younger voice tone, whether it was Vanessa, yeah. But in true Lucasfilm animation form, they are being very loyal to their voice actors, so I was really excited to see that it was Vanessa once again voicing Hera.
But all in all, it was really cool to see that the episode involving Hera and her family, Cham, and Cham's wife, Eleni, and seeing that this her first exposure to the Empire and the implications of the Empire, and that sort of initiation of her love of flight, but also involvement in freedom fighting and rebellion before the Rebel Alliance actually existed. Later on in Clone Wars, Cham Syndulla does appear again in Season 3, Episode 3, Supply Lines. And then in terms of the timeline, after the Bad Batch episodes, he makes his appearances in Rebels in Season 2 and Season 5. As we mentioned, when we were just summarizing this episode, the episode closed with Chopper rescuing or escorting Hera to safety in a land speeder. And it's kind of obvious at that point that we're going to get a follow-up to this story, and that's extremely cool. I'm looking forward to seeing them progress that particular story and Hera's story, even though it is a Bad Batch episode. Next episode is actually called Rescue on Ryloth, so that has strong implications that it's Hera that's going to need rescuing. And wouldn't surprise me if, well, it'd be really nice to see if it's Bad Batch that's doing the rescuing.
Yeah, this was an interesting episode, and that you almost forget that you're watching the Bad Batch because they're only briefly in it. You're so engrossed in the story on Ryloth that you almost forget, like, oh, where's the Bad Batch in this? But it was really fun to see a little bit more of Hera. She is the one character from Rebels, as well as Ahsoka, that has been sort of sneakily put into other things. We hear very subtle references to Syndulla in the background of Rogue One. They put the ghost in wherever they can and amongst Star Wars starships and things like that when they're talking about the rebellion. So we know that she is the sort of the one from that ghost crew that really has a long-standing history with the rebellion. And we know that she goes beyond the rebellion, that she's not sort of lost in war, as it were. So I think it's fun that we see, because this is essentially the very early stages of the rebellion, the sort of the little localized resistance groups that are forming to sort of rebel against the Empire before it becomes a very coordinated group. So it's neat to see, even though she's very young, that she is getting a taste of it. And I did especially like the, albeit brief, interactions between Hera and Omega. I think that's neat,
yeah,
to see. Omega's like just a little bit standoffish because she's obviously wary. She's got to protect herself. She knows that there could be spies or people out to get them. But as soon as they kind of break down that sort of hesitation, they bond over flying and sort of adventure. And I thought that was neat to see sort of two young girl characters sort of bonding. And we see that even from a very, very young age, Hera loves to fly, which of course she's a very skilled pilot by the time we see her in Rebels. So I like those little backstory moments there.
Yeah, and you just kind of reminded me a little bit there. We were talking earlier, I mean, this episode's obviously intended as a blending of the Clone Wars, Bad Batch, and Rebels. It's done in the Bad Batch animation style, but it's just a blending of those storylines, which was very fun. And I think it kind of speaks to the fact that it almost doesn't matter what title you're watching anymore. It's just Star Wars, and I like that. Obviously, this is now called the Bad Batch and not the Clone Wars, because the Clone Wars is effectively over, and they're just the Bad Batch as central characters are in some ways just a vehicle to tell the story that bridges the Clone Wars and the prequel trilogy. But I think all these stories should sort of, you know, be able to be told and wrapped up, and we see the starts and the finishes and the relationships between them.
Yeah, sometimes I almost forget that we're so close to the Clone Wars until we see things like what is now the Empire using Republic gunships. And there was just that sort of pang of knowing that they were so prominent in episode two with the clones coming to sort of, rescue the Jedi and sort of support them on Geonosis. And then now we're seeing the Empire using those very distinctive ships to oppress the people on Ryloth. What and was- I was like, oh, so sad. And the clone troopers, I thought it was really interesting going back and watching the Clone Wars, because right at the end, when they've sort of rescued them from the separatists on Ryloth, they talk about...
Chamsundola was speaking to Rex, I think.
Yeah, that they're like, as soon as the war is over, the clone troopers will leave them alone, that they're not going to be an oppressive force. And then here we are, where the clone troopers are now the Empire.
Well, I think the way it panned out was Rex said that they'd support them as much as they needed to. But Cham was suspicious of having local troops from either side. He actually said, "How long before we'll be fighting you?"
Yeah, which was quite interesting that they really knew their history with what was said and what happened in those Clone Wars episodes, and it really does tie quite directly that it wasn't just sort of like, oh, let's for fun watch some of the Clone Wars episodes that have Cham Syndulla in it. It did really directly tie into this episode where we are now seeing his worst fears come true, that the clone troopers haven't left and they are now basically in charge. And they're now in essentially the same position as they were with the separatists, being an oppressed race.
Yeah.
We know that in some of the older Star Wars lore, there was sort of a common sort of underground notion that Twi'leks were slaves because of some of the characters we see in Jabba's palace. So I do have to wonder whether this was sort of tying into that they have been in a sort of a state of oppression from different factions. We see the separatists, now the Empire, and we don't know whether they ever get out from under the Empire's boot. By the time we get to Return of the Jedi, it could be sort of a bit of a sad story and why Hera takes it so personally.
Well, clearly it's the catalyst for her becoming a freedom fighter or becoming a rebel herself. And just cycling around a few thoughts that are going through my mind. You talked about the gunships, and obviously Hera's fighting stormtroopers and rebels, but clone troopers at this point. I can't wait to see. I hope we see either in this season or in a subsequent season of Bad Batch. We're still hoping for Bad Batch season two next year. I hope we see the first stormtrooper armor. I hope we see the actual transition between, you know, whether or not they're actually using old Clone Wars hardware and tech like the gunships or whatever. It would be really interesting to see clones and stormtroopers in the same frame, or at least to see that first iteration of stormtroopers when they come about.
Yes,
and that thought in some ways first crossed my mind when we had a bit of a conversation about Crosshair's Imperial helmet and his role in the Empire having a bit of a Death Trooper feeling to it, because Death Troopers show up first in Rogue One alongside stormtroopers effectively.
It'd be interesting to see if they sort of save that dramatic sort of reveal for like the final episode, because we know that whenever the Bad Batch finishes, it's basically going to lead off into sort of Rogue One and/or territory, you know, where the Empire is solidly in control. We've got a growing rebellion, and we've got the classic Stormtrooper helmets and things like that. So I kind of feel like they're waiting for it to be a dramatic moment because I think, in my mind, it's almost like the Empire is continuing to use the Clone Trooper armor because they know for a lot of planets, the Clone Troopers
were
seen as the good guys, and they're friendly and not scary. So it's kind of like, you know, they're like, oh, they helped liberated you. We're just going to stick around and kind of help get structure and all this
really
kind of stuff.
But yeah.
They're setting up factories and armaments and things like that under the guise of the Clone Troopers just helping out. So I think when we see that moment of the first Stormtrooper helmet, it's going to be when, you know, that the coin flip and it's no, we're here to control you.
Yeah, and that will have strong implications for the success or of the Empire in some ways. And it may mark the full transition away from clones and into recruited soldiers, because we're seeing quite distinctly along the way in the Bad Batch, clone troopers not really being that fully happy with what's going on in the Empire, particularly Hauser in this episode. A number of times it was clear that he wasn't happy with what Rampart was actually up to.
When he first catches Hera outside, sort of in the grass, overlooking the Imperial factory, he says, like, I should, but I won't report this. He knows that it would come with a lot of consequences if he did, and he's trying to play nice. And then later on, when she's fully arrested for being on the ship that was getting the weapons, you can see him being just, oh, okay, I have to arrest a child for treason, and knowing that that's not going to go down well. That you can see the little moments. And I think it's interesting because we don't see much from the viewpoint of the other clones outside of the Bad Batch. So I thought it was interesting to see that. Obviously, we saw Rex, but just seeing one of the other, because we assume that these clone troopers still have their chips, but it's still just that little, you know, that the conscious that most of the clone troopers have. Coming through, because I'm curious to see whether we'll see any other sort of clone troopers standing up. Like, we saw some of the recruits not so sure about Crosshair's decision and order to eliminate the rebels on Saw Gerrera's planet earlier in the series. It'll be interesting to see if we see other clone troopers kind of step out of line because they don't like what they're having to do now.
So yeah, a really good episode of Star Wars that we just saw there. And if you are inclined to go back and watch the Clone Wars as we did to get a little bit of a backstory and just to revisit some of the Clone Wars, we highly recommend that. It's a lot of fun. The particular episodes that relate to Cham Syndulla again in Season 1, Episodes 19, 20 and 21. It's a loose story arc of three episodes. They're almost standalone, but they do set up the whole Ryloth scenario. And just a reminder, we'd forgotten at the time, but the episode 20 is the very fun Waxer and Boyle finding Numa, the child Twi'lek, and that's a fan favorite, that episode, I think.
Moments like this remind me just how amazing it is that we have Disney Plus, where we're like, oh, let's bring up the Clone Wars, and it's right there every episode for fans to go back and watch. You don't need to dig out your DVDs or try and track it down somewhere. Just having like all the Star Wars.
It made it real easy.
Yeah. So if you just feel like, for it, yeah, just jumping back and watching some old Clone Wars to tie in with the Bad Batch, keeping up with Bad Batch and stuff like that. It's just brilliant having just this one place where all the Star Wars is.
So looking forward to the next episode of the Bad Batch on Friday night, Rescue on Ryloth. But that's about it for this installment. So I guess we are done doing talking. Thank you once again for tuning in. We always appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders, and another podcast episode next week and every Friday. And don't forget, you can jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Thank you for listening.
And may the Force be with you.